You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, opioids have had a profound effect on many Wisconsin families. We'll talk with an Oconomowoc mother who started an awareness campaign to honor her late son who died from an opioid overdose. First, after threatening to veto the $1.3 trillion omnibus bill, President Donald Trump begrudgingly signed it into law on Friday, averting a government shutdown. He called the measure ridiculous for only having a fraction of the money he wanted for a border wall with Mexico. It also didn't have a solution for the 800,000 Dreamers, the undocumented immigrants who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children and whose protected status is up in the air. But Trump said he had to sign the bill because it increased spending for the military, and that's his top priority to keep America safe.
I say to Congress, I will never sign another bill like this again. I'm not going to do it again. Nobody read it. It's only hours old. Some people don't even know what it is. $1.3 trillion. It's the second largest ever.
The plan funds the government through September of this year. So what's actually included in this omnibus bill and what's not? David Primo is here to break it down for us. He is an associate professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. He's the author of three books, including Rules and Restraint, Government Spending, and the Design of Institutions. David, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
As far as omnibus spending bills go, this is a big one at $1.3 trillion. Now that we've had a little time to dig into it, can you give us the main highlights in terms of what this bill does and doesn't do?
Sure. I mean, I think the right question is, what does this bill not do? I mean, there's so much in it, so much to digest. I mean, I think it's important to take just a very quick step back and realize that this bill is sort of stage two in the budget process. The first part of this process occurred a month ago when Congress agreed and the president signed a bill that set that spending amount of $1.3 trillion, essentially. And what they did in the past month is put together a mammoth bill that figures out how we're going to allocate all of that money. And so you had increases in defense spending, you had increases in non-defense spending, and you had a lot of policy riders, if you will, added to that omnibus bill that placed restrictions on what the government can do, that ordered the government to do other things. And so you had a mix of policy prescriptions, both in terms of what, again, the government can do and what the government can't do. So, again, as you mentioned, we didn't see any action on the DACA program. It was made very clear, as you mentioned at the end of last hour, that that tipped workers would be able to keep their tips. But on the other hand, you also saw lots of new programming, lots of new funding for programs that were important to Democrats. So you saw an increase in funding for Health and Human Services. You saw an increase in research funding. So there's just a lot sort of to digest in this piece of legislation. And it's easy to criticize the process. And the reason it's easy to criticize the process is that the process is, in fact, broken. Regardless of whether you're happy or unhappy with the specific line items in this bill, I think we need to take a look at the bigger picture here, which is that this bill does nothing to deal with our long-term budget challenges. And whether you're on the left or the right, that should be a big concern.
Well, and how different is the process this time than we've seen in the past, depending on, you know, what party has the White House or different houses of Congress? I mean, is there always this kind of give and take where for one party to get the things that are most important to them, they have to support things that the other party want because otherwise nothing is going to get passed?
The give and take is definitely part of what you would expect in a legislative process where you have divided government. What's more of the same, and that's particularly worrisome, though, is that the actual process of putting together a budget is so disjointed. Congress has a budget process in place that should be a several-month affair where there are priorities that are debated and discussed, where you have 12 separate appropriations bills that fund the government. But what you've seen in the last couple of decades is we've moved completely away from that. And this has been true for Republican presidents, and it's been true for Democratic presidents. What we see now is we have these continuing resolutions. We have the threats of shutdown. And then several months into the fiscal year, we get a budget bill that takes all of this negotiation and puts it into one bill that's passed under a lot of pressure and doesn't necessarily lead to good governance. And you know, keep in mind, right, this bill just funds the government through September. Mm-hmm. This should have been passed months ago. So for the Democrats and the Republicans, this is a big failure, but it's one of many that we've seen over the past few years under both Democratic and Republican presidents.
The president wanted $25 billion over 10 years to pay for a border wall with Mexico, and instead he only got $1.6 billion, and that can only go towards fencing similar to what's already in place. But he insisted yesterday on Twitter that he got a down payment, that work will start immediately, and that the rest of the money will come. What is he referring to there for where the rest of the money might come from?
I think that's a hopeful thinking. Some might call it wishful thinking. I'll be more neutral and call it hopeful thinking. You know, we often will hear in news reports that there's been a 10-year budget agreement, or that there'll be a 10-year spending agreement. But all of that is always subject to renegotiation. Appropriations, government spending has to be determined on a year-to-year basis. Congress can't commit money today to be spent 10 years in the future. And as a result, you know, even if Congress had promised the president this border wall you know, over 10 years, a certain amount of funding, if a new president came into office and a new and Democrats retook Congress, they could undo it. And that's the challenge of year-to-year appropriations, is that you often will get support for a program, but then it can disappear. So even if the president had gotten his border wall, if you will, had gotten his 10 years of funding, that very well could have been erased by a future administration.
We're talking with David Primo right now. He's an associate professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. And we're digging into some of the details of the omnibus spending bill that was signed into law on Friday. And the one of the things that is included in this bill is that states will get $380 million to shore up their voting systems, including electronic enhancements. What do we know about what that might look like?
I think that's a signal from the Congress that they view the sanctity of our voting system to be very important. And so you could imagine now that there's going to be more support at the state level for the development of more secure voting technologies. And that seems to me, at least, to me, that's really a signal from both the left and the right that that there are these real concerns about meddling in our electoral system, and we want to take steps to prevent that. But ultimately, this is ultimately a state level issue, because voting systems are state level systems. Mm-hmm. And so the quality of that implementation is going to depend a great deal on the support the states have and what the states decide to do. And that's sort of the tension in our system, is that we have a federal system, so much of that gets devolved to the states.
NASA actually got a bigger spending boost than it had asked for, including for space technology and exploration. Do we know why NASA moved to the top of the list that way?
You know, this is one of those examples where it's hard to know how the sausage was made, because it was made in such a closed door process. You know, we also saw, you know, a significant increase in funding for the Education Department, in many ways contrary to what the Secretary of Education had requested. We saw a lot more money for the NIH, for the National Institutes of Health. You know, there were a lot of what some people might regard as surprises in this bill relative to the president's requests. But again, I think it's important to put this into a larger context, that in most years, the president's budget is dead on arrival. This was true under Barack Obama. It was largely true under President Bush. And now we're sort of seeing it coming to fruition under President Trump. That the budget the president proposes is really a wish, a hope, a plan. It's ultimately up to Congress to allocate the money and decide on how much is going to be spent, and they guard that prerogative very jealously. And that's sort of that's what you're seeing now is the result of that. And And again, it was a compromise. As President Trump said, he wanted more defense spending, and the price of that was an increase in discretionary spending. From where I sit as a scholar of the budget process and as a student of fiscal policy, that worries me because, you know, as we see an increase in defense spending, as we see an increase in discretionary spending, what we don't see is a focus on our long-term fiscal problems that are really centered around entitlements that, that are unsustainable. That's nowhere in this budget because those entitlements continue on autopilot. They're outside of the budget process until we decide to do something about them, and that worries me.
The president wanted to do away with the National Endowment for the Arts, but it actually got a $3 million boost, as did the National Endowment for the Humanities, and spending for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was maintained. Wisconsin Public Radio and TV do get funding through the CPB. Why is this so often a point of contention, funding things like the arts and humanities?
That really plays into the social war we're having in this country, I would argue. And again, put it into context, we've seen this for a couple of decades now, where this is a way for conservative Republicans to appeal to the base. It's by now regarded that this is not going to pass, that these programs are going to survive. President Trump isn't the first president to propose some of these sorts of cuts. He won't be the last. But ultimately, if you think about who benefits from these programs, it is individuals who are spread across lots of congressional districts. And as a result, it becomes very difficult to cut these programs that have a broad base of support and it's easy to propose. Again, this is why the budget is the president's wish list. It's easy to propose, but it's much more difficult to actually get it through the Congress.
And David, as we wrap up, as you said, the budget funds the government through September, and then we've got the fall midterms just a few weeks after that. What do you expect that budget deadline and those negotiations so close to the midterm elections to look like?
I hesitate to make predictions, but I would be shocked if we actually had a budget in place. Let me rephrase. We actually have a spending agreement in place. That agreement that was reached a month ago on the parameters of the budget covers the next fiscal year as well. But I would be shocked if we actually had an agreement on how we're going to allocate that money. That is going to be punted until the beginning of 2019, so we're going to have a late appropriations process once more. And what will be interesting to see is what happens when President Trump, a year from now, or maybe 10, 11 months from now, gets another bill that again, breaks budget caps that had been agreed to in the past because that's what's in that budget agreement that was reached last month. Is he going to veto it as he promised, or will he once again back down? He made a very clear pledge. He's never going to sign a bill like this again. Well, what happens when inevitably, I would argue, we have a similarly messy process? Is he going to veto the bill or is he going to back down? That'll be interesting to see.
Well, David, thank you so much for joining us and giving us some of those details on the bill.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
David Primo is an associate professor of political science and business administration at the University of Rochester. He studies American politics and fiscal policy and joined us to talk about the omnibus spending bill that was signed into law on Friday.